Call the House Committee on Transportation and Economic Development to order. We're going to take things quickly on the two work sessions that are on our agenda before we get to the memorial. We didn't want this tremendous crowd to miss out on the work sessions on the other bills. But we will. I also want to make sure that we're giving the notice that House Bill 2081 will be carried over until Friday. And with that, we'll open a work session on House Bill 2356. Representative Benz?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2356 with a due pass recommendation to Ways and Means by prior reference.
Thank you. Do we need to go to the floor first and then by prior reference?
No.
Okay. Representative Benz has moved House Bill 2356 with a due pass recommendation to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion of the motion? I don't see any. Is there any objection? The motion carries. House Bill 2356 moves to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation, and I'll close the work session on House Bill 2356 and open a public hearing on House Joint Memorial 22. Zach, if you want to give us a quick summary, please.
House Joint Memorial 22 urges the federal government to fund the Columbia River Crossing Project.
Thank you. So we have a panel of legislators who are here. Representative Byer is already making her way down. Senator Starr, you're here. Thank you. Also on our list, Senator Byer. I haven't seen him yet, but we'll invite him up as he comes in. Representative Kotek, same thing. And Representative Greg Smith was here. Come on up, please, sir.
Thank you.
I'll let you decide who goes first.
All right. Thanks. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Representative Carrie Byer from House District 12, which is Springfield, and I'm here today in support of HJM 22. I come at this as in my role as a member of the Transportation Committee of the House, vice chair for two sessions, and chair for two sessions, and now a co-vice chair as we figure all of this out. We have been dealing with numerous transportation issues over the years, but this one is one that obviously has been there almost my entire, and probably more than my entire career in the legislature. Have held numerous informational hearings, updates on this project over the years that I've been here. I participated in a joint committee meeting with the Washington Senate, House Senate, and Oregon Senate and the House members. In Portland to have a joint conversation on the issue. This is a project that has been discussed and worked for a number of years, numerous opportunities for input as the project moved forward, lots of stops along the way to review, see if we're doing the right thing, if we need to kind of change direction a little bit, look at this a little closer. So I have been very confident that as the process moves forward, that there has been plenty of opportunity for input on this. And with that, I think we all understand that this is a bridge that is a vital link on the I-5 corridor from Mexico to Canada. This particular bridge is a bit of a weak link in that corridor that I think needs to be addressed. Original bridge was built in 1917. The second bridge was built in 1958, and we are currently replacing bridges all across the state that have been around not even as long as that, the original bridge, and about the same time frame as the second bridge. So I think that I've actually walked the bridge, it is a little scary. And the traffic, pedestrian, and transit that, or at least pedestrian and bike traffic, that are wanting to use the bridge is probably not the safest thing at this point in time. And with that, I know we have lots of people signed up, so I would urge the committee's support of HDM 22. And with that, I will turn it over.
Thank you. Senator Starr.
Thank you. For the record, I'm Bruce Starr, State Senator representing Western Washington County. I have the privilege and opportunity to testify here in support of House Joint Memorial 22. And I really appreciate this committee taking this memorial up. It is important, I believe, that for this legislature to weigh in on this project at this particular point in time, as this is an important, really, really important piece of infrastructure that connects all of the West Coast. I don't think I need to explain the project to you, and there will be others that will follow us that will go into more detail on the project and the process that has brought us to the point that we are here, where we are today. And I will just tell you that there remains to be questions about this project as we continue to move it forward. And those questions, I believe, will be answered as the project continues to move ahead. This is a very important piece of infrastructure. It is important because of the freight component. Freight that moves across this particular bridge is important not just to the Portland metropolitan area, but it's important to anybody in the state that's moving freight on the West Coast. And this bridge is really it's a key link and a vital link. Quite honestly, we have witnessed over the last several days the devastation that earthquakes can wreck on a country and on the landscape. There's no question at all in the event of a significant earthquake off Oregon's coast that this bridge would be rendered ineffective. There would be no commerce, no trade across that bridge at all. The counterseeks on the counterweights on the bridge would most certainly be out of alignment, causing the bridge to not be operative. If not, they would be on the bottom of the river. And so it's important for us to recognize that fact and for us to move forward with the project. This memorial doesn't commit this legislature or the next legislature to do anything. What it does do is it properly recognizes that there's a federal role in this particular project. Interstate 5 is an interstate highway. It's a federal road or federal highway. And this project will not or cannot be built without the help of the federal government as it relates to funding their portion of the bridge. And so that's the key message. You will hopefully see in the next couple of years a reauthorization of a Surface Transportation Act at the federal level. And this particular memorial is timely because of that fact. The Congress is late in passing a reauthorization. Hopefully they get it done soon, but it's important for, I believe, this legislature to highlight this particular project to our partners at the federal level and encourage them to not lose sight of this particular piece of infrastructure. And it's not only statewide significance, but really it's multi-state and it's the entire western region of the United States. So with that, I will turn the microphone over to my colleagues. But again, I just ask and encourage you to move this memorial forward so that you can have a full vote on the House floor and we can take it up on the Senate. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator Starr. Representative Smith?
Thank you, Co-Chair Reed and Co-Chair Bentz. It's good to be out of Ways and Means and come sit down on a policy committee. I see if you want to get a full house, you bring a memorial forward like this. So, for the record, I'm Oregon State Representative Greg Smith, and I have the distinct pleasure of representing Morrow County and parts of Umatilla County and Union County and Wallowa County. And I wonder, why would I be here supporting House Joint Memorial 22? Well, what I would share with you is that intermodal freight mobility is essential to Eastern Oregon. And what benefits the Port of Portland and the Portland metro area in terms of moving containers benefits Eastern Oregon. I also have the distinct pleasure of representing the second largest port in the state of Oregon, and that's the Port of Morrow. And in a few minutes, you'll be hearing from Gary Neal, who's the general manager of the Port of Morrow. And I hope each and every one of you will take time to listen to his comments about how important it is to have connectivity as it relates to moving freight, whether it's via barge, rail, or truck. It's all a system. It's all a system. And when you have one weak link in that system, it can bog down the movement of containers. And in rural eastern Oregon, we just simply can't afford that type of bog down. And so I just want you to know I appreciate your leadership on House Joint Memorial 22. I think this sends a message to our congressional delegation that we're serious about reducing congestion in the Portland metro area that benefits the entire state of Oregon, that we're serious about improving freight mobility that moves containers not only through the Portland metro area but through all of the state of Oregon, and that we're serious about enhancing transit options. So, co-chairs, I appreciate this opportunity to share these thoughts with you, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Smith. Representative Kotek.
Good afternoon, co-chairs, members of the committee. Tina Kotek, State Representative, House District 44, North and Northeast Portland. Thank you for holding a public hearing today on House Joint Memorial 22. I'm really happy to see this HJM here. 2 years ago, we could have had a conversation about the Columbia River crossing, but I actually think we've made a lot of progress in the last 2 years in terms of defining the project, clarifying the roles of the project, and now we are here talking about sending a signal to the federal government about their role in this project. And I hope that we're going to have a robust conversation today, because this is a complex and large project, and I think there should be a high level of accountability. And there has been a lot of feedback to this legislature already, but there is more to come, and this is just the start of that conversation. As many of you know, or maybe you don't know, House District 44 is where the project is located on the Oregon side of the impact area. It's completely in my district, and it is contiguous to the neighborhoods who are most affected: Hayden Island, Kenton, East Columbia, and the Bridgeton neighborhoods. Many of my constituents support the Columbia River crossing as a comprehensive solution to a variety of problems that plague the 5 mile impact area. We may not agree on all the details, but we do agree to a large extent that this is a solution we need that is 10 years in the making. Let me just put a human face on this for my district. There are huge safety issues around the bridge and around the interchanges that are connected to the bridge area. Huge number of collisions. You'll hear some numbers around there. There's probably a collision a day. There are no shoulders on the Interstate 5 bridge, so if there is an accident, everything shuts down. Emergency response vehicles cannot reach portions of my district because of the traffic and the problems when the bridge goes up, when there's a collision, and that is completely unacceptable. There's an earthquake risk, which Senator Starr mentioned. And then, frankly, the bicyclists and pedestrians who try to cross the bridge with the existing sidewalks and bike lanes really do take their lives into their own hands to do that. Congestion is an issue. We have crashes. We have the bridge lifts. If any of you have driven up there and sat an hour in traffic waiting for the bridge to come back down because a barge has gone underneath, you know how frustrating that is and the impact on the overall economic interest in the area. I also believe, and one of the reasons I got first involved in this issue, is the impact on the air quality in my district when traffic is at a standstill for hours on end. This project will move traffic and freight better with the improved interchanges, which are very dangerous because of the on-off ramps and the weaving that goes on. It will also, with the improvements on the bridge itself, also improve that mobility, which will improve air quality. My favorite description of this project comes from Tom Warren, who is the national expert who not only chaired the independent review panel, but also the bridge review panel. And he drew this really wonderful Venn diagram of all these circles of interest around this project. And when you put all those circles together of all the different stakeholders on this project, there's a very tiny window of opportunity where all those circles intersect. In this impact area, you have water navigation, you have air corridors, you have freight hubs, you have two ports, you have two cities, you have commuter traffic, you have transit needs, you have neighborhood traffic, and you have environmental impacts. When you put all those things together, you have a very complicated and complex project. So there are a lot of questions because it is a complicated project. But even though that it is complex, I do think it's a comprehensive approach, and I think we should consider all the aspects of it as an integrated whole. We can talk about the bridge, but we also have to talk about the interchanges. We cannot leave them out. They are all put together in a way to move traffic and improve safety in the corridor. And I just want to conclude by saying I think this is the right time to send a signal to the federal government that they have a role to play in this. It is a clear understanding among all the partners, particularly in the metro area, that this will take shared commitment at the federal level, the state level, and the local level to do this project in a way that actually solves the problems that need to be solved. So with that, I really encourage you to have an additional hearing on this or a work session very soon so we can get on with this, but I am looking forward to the conversation today, and thank you very much for the time allowed today. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Representative Kotek. For the benefit of the committee and the audience, my intention now is to invite the two legislators who are here in opposition, Representative Eric Brewer and Representative Cannon, forward in respecting their busy schedules like the rest of us. Senator Telfer indicated she might be here as well. I don't see her unless I'm missing her, so if she comes in, we'll try to accommodate her. Following that, we'll hear from the Governor's Office and ODOT, and then begin alternating proponents and opponents through the time that we have remaining, recognizing that it's not as much as we might otherwise like. Representative Brewer,
Defer to Representative Cannon first?
Representative Cannon.
Thank you. Members of the committee, for the record, Ben Cannon, State Representative, House District 46. This testimony is hard for me to deliver. It's hard because of my respect for the sponsors of the bill, because of my respect for the co-chairs of this committee, who are also sponsors of the bill, because of my respect for this governor, political hero of mine, and I know his support for the project. And frankly, it's hard because the support of much of the business community, much of the labor community for this project has given the appearance of unanimity about the need to move forward with the current version of the Columbia River Crossing. It's hard. I've never testified in opposition to a bill in committee before, and this is a memorial. Why bother?
Started somewhere up to
but I think it's important to send a message, too, that Oregonians are not united in support of this project. They are not convinced that it is justified to spend $3.6 billion of federal and state dollars primarily for the benefit of Vancouver commuters, primarily on a project that will move a bottleneck several miles south. And let me be clear, the I-5 crossing of the Columbia needs improvement. Let me also be clear that building and maintaining infrastructure must be a pillar of our economic development strategy for a durable recovery. We need highways, bridges, school buildings, transmission, rail, ports, and shipping channels, not only to help put people back to work in the short term, but to help create the conditions for a lasting economic recovery. We need more investment in infrastructure in this state and this country, not less. But let me suggest to you that there are some questions that need to be asked about this project and answered before supporting this memorial. I've handed to you a letter that's been signed by 20 members of the House that raise some of those questions. I'll put the sort of macro question this way. Does the CRC project, that's the current design and proposal, 5 miles of freeway and interchange work, including a bridge, the largest public works project in the history of this region, does this project meet the highest possible bar for fiscal responsibility? That's our obligation, to set a high bar for fiscal responsibility. Is this plan the right plan? This would be the largest public works project in the region's history, and yet this memorial is, to my knowledge, the first time that the legislature has had the opportunity to formally weigh in. So the specific questions the letter raises, one about what's the true cost of the CRC. I mentioned $3.6 billion. There's a suggestion here that if we look at the actual cost of the project over the lifetime, it will be closer to $10 billion, counting for debt service, the need for improvements to the Rose Quarter, et cetera, $10 billion. What about the traffic and tolling projections that have been used by our Department of Transportation to develop the revenue projections for the project? Some significant unanswered questions related to the ability of tolling to help cover the proposed costs for this bridge. And third, what about the possibility of cost overruns? You know, look at these major mega projects around the world and see cost overruns virtually as a fact of life. So even if we accept the $3.6 billion or take the $10 billion, whichever you prefer, is that really the true number? We heard earthquakes mentioned, seismic significance. I would ask you to ask proponents of this project, where does this project rank on a list of the state's most seismically vulnerable bridges? Maybe the answer is this is far and away the most vulnerable. I'm not sure that if we take just the $600 million that the state is committing to spend through its gas tax dollars and dedicate those to seismically vulnerable bridges, that this project rises to the top of the list. I'd encourage the committee to consider alternatives to the current proposal. I think we can do this. We can do this for freight. We can do this for passenger vehicles. We can do this for light rail. We can do this for commuter rail, too. And we can do it in a staged way, a more affordable way, a better deal for Oregon taxpayers and federal taxpayers. Why does this memorial matter? Well, this memorial is symbolic, but symbols matter. And the symbol that passing this memorial would send is that this legislature, I believe, would send the signal that this legislature supports this particular CRC project that has $100 million of steam behind it. No other vote on it here, to my knowledge, in this legislature. I encourage this committee, this legislature, to send a signal, a different kind of signal, not only to the federal government, but to Oregonians and Oregon taxpayers. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Cannon. Representative Air Brewer.
Thank you. I was hoping for, again, my name is Katie Air Brewer, and I was hoping for my staff to have sections 1 and 2 from CRC's financial draft plan from September 2010 here. I'll be referencing it. If it shows up, of course, we'll have it handed out. We'll speak of it. Because I will be referencing it in some parts. I'm here as a representative for the citizens of my district, House District 29, also as a representative for all taxpayers of Oregon. And as someone who's dealt with finances and taxes in my professional job for well over 20 years, and as a planning commissioner for over 6 years for the city of Hillsboro, I was most recently vice president of the planning commission before leaving to come to Salem. And my experience there is very germane. I understand what intergovernmental agency agreements are. I understand economic development, transportation, all of livability, significant natural resources, and balancing all of that when coming to a conclusion on a specific project. And I also learned most importantly is the public process and how important and sacred that is to us. I ran on fiscal responsibility, and I have strong financial concerns about the Columbia River Crossing project, and that's why I'm here. First off, I do support the I-5 corridor improvement in whatever form that may take. I do support that. I do believe something needs to be done. But I also believe that I'd be practicing legislative malpractice if I did not wave a very large cautionary flag here today on this project. In my testimony, I'll be focusing on three areas: financial viability of the project, public process, and this memorial. As my colleague mentioned, what is the total price? We've been hearing various prices, $3.5 to $3.8 billion, but that is before cost overruns. The Columbia River Crossing draft financial plan in two sections recognizes cost overruns, and I'll point you to page 1-11. That's one place, and I'll talk about it there, and it's replicated on page 2-15. The second bullet point on 1-11 contemplates cost overruns in its verbiage. But in the third bullet point, it states that some highway improvement can be deferred if the cost of core project elements, such as the transit element or main bridge crossing, exceed estimates. This would allow funding associated with deferred elements to be applied to cost overruns and funding shortfalls on the core improvement. It also further talks about extending the tolling duration to pay for deferred projects elements. So even in its own financial plan, it recognizes that we may not be able to afford all of it and that we're willing to sacrifice some of those projects with the current revenues as we phase that in. But then it begs the question, how will we then pay for those deferred elements of this project, which has never been talked comprehensively before this legislature? Page 2-15 in section 2.5.2.2 says almost the very same thing in verbatim. So what is this project? Where is the legislative public conversation on it? Public transportation is an element of it. Tolling I-5 only, or will it also include I-205 tolling? How many lanes? The design. Which design are we going with? We still don't know that. The exchanges, there's 7 of them. They're still controversial as to how they will be built and the footprint of which they'll take. Is this the priority for Washington State? They want at least one other bridge as a priority for federal dollars over this bridge, if not two. How do we pay for it? We have tolling. Again, which bridges? Is the tolling going to be only for the expansion of the roads and the bridge, or will it also include for light rail? The numbers in the traffic study of which tolling is based on are speculative, dated, and do not include what we have recently seen in the last few months as escalating gas prices. It's in flux. We need a certain amount of traffic, toll-paying traffic, to pay for light rail, and we need a certain amount to ride light rail, but not too much, so that we have enough paying the tolls. So do we or don't we want to promote public transportation, and where is that sweet spot? Have we determined that? The financial plan also contemplates increased tolling as the time goes on. That's problematic. We are securitizing through bonds, as this financial plan also contemplates, speculative tolling with a state guarantee on the bonds. We already guarantee $3.2 billion in bonds for various honorable purposes, such as school bonds, capital bonds. We are $11.2 billion in direct debt as a state, and we have $1.4 to $4 billion, depending if you're talking state or municipalities and other government agencies, in PERS, unfunded liabilities. If you go to page 1-11, the second bullet point talks about the bonds being state-backed. If you go to 2-13, the third bullet point also talks about the bonds being state-backed. And yet, if you talk to the proponents, it's still questionable. So which is it? The financing plan also, on page 1-7 and on 2.2, the section 2.2, ODOT and Washington State DOT funding we will raise state funding during the 2011 legislative session, which is today, which is right now. Page 2-7, section 2.4.3 talks about new revenues. That to me says tax increases. Are we prepared in this climate to obligate our taxpayers to tax increases? Really? Is this the time? I don't think that's why I was sent here right now.
Representative Brewer, I hate to do this to you, but I wonder if you could wrap up, just because we've got two full pages of people who want to testify, plus the governor's office and ODOT, and lots to hear from you.
I would be happy to do that.
Thank you.
So, if I can. The memorial seems rather innocuous at this point. I've been told that the memorial isn't really needed. If not, then why are we doing it? The discussion's been light with the legislature as a whole, and one of the biggest projects to hit our state. I do not believe that we as a legislature should not be talking about $4 billion floating around as if it means nothing. If we sign this, we will no longer be at the table for a comprehensive discussion of the merits of this traffic solution, and further conversation will be only on components such as the gas fee increases, tolling, bonding, but no longer on the definition and scope of the project. I urge you to not pass this resolution. Do not give our power away to manage a $4 billion investment at this time prematurely on an undefined project with speculative funding models with additional debt to Oregon. I'll conclude there. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Greenlick, lots of people waiting behind you. I want to hear from you, please.
Thank you very much. Co-chairs, members of the committee, I'll be very brief. I'm opposed to this resolution. I'm opposed to resolutions like this anyway. I think there's nothing that we waste more time on than dumb resolutions that go to Congress that don't say anything. But that's not the point. The point is this resolution is, instead of having a debate on this issue in a serious way, I have a bill before you that I would think would be a much stronger vehicle that really will allow us to take a serious look at what we're up to here. I think we've moved ahead. We've spent millions, tens, hundreds of millions of dollars just on the say-so of the Transportation Commission without the legislature taking a serious look at it. I think it's a steamroller headed off a cliff, and I think it's time to stop, to take a serious chance to debate this issue, to find out whether we as a legislature believe it is the right way to go after a substantive debate rather than after a symbolic debate about a resolution that would go in place of it. So I would urge you, bring up my bill or any one of the other substantive bills, and let's have a chance to really look at the issue to find out whether there is, in fact, federal money, to find out what our partners really plan on doing, and to give us a chance to express a serious opinion on the value of moving ahead with this project.
Thank you, Representative Greenlick. And we'll take your advice and take up some substance here and ask some of the other folks. Representative Lindsay, were you trying to get some attention there.
Questions, just want to make sure that the committee had an opportunity to ask some questions.
At this point, we could do that, but at this point, it's coming at the cost of presentations from the ODOT and the governor's office and a lot of other people. Did you have a question?
Sure.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Really quick.
That's the code of
Very
the West,
quick.
Right.
Representative Cannon, I have a proposal. Maybe we could put some bushes or something on, call it a greenway or something. But, in all reality, you mentioned that passing the bill would send a message that we accept the plan as proposed. What about the opposite? What if we don't pass it? What sort of message does that send?
Thanks for the question, Representative Reed, Representative Lindsay. I think the message it would send is, let's take a step back. Let's ask our community partners, many of whom you'll hear from today, to
maybe
examine.
We hope.
We hope. To examine the leading proposal against some of the alternatives that have been proposed, answer some of these questions, that we want a bit of a pause before striding forward.
Thank you.
No follow-up.
Go ahead.
I said no follow-up.
Oh, thank you.
I'd like to comment on that. Just not doing it's not the answer. I think you need to not pass this resolution and then take up a serious resolution where we can really test this measure, because this really does need to be tested in this session and needs to be tested substantively. And also, I'd like to say, make sure you're out of here in time.
Good point. Smith.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I'll delay this question for the people who testify following, but I did want to make the comment just to say thanks. And your words, Ben, I know they were heartfelt, and I could see it on your face. This is a much easier project for us to keep our heads down on. We've spent $130 million without taking legislative action. I think we've kept our heads down, and I don't think we can afford to do it. I think politically it's way easier not to have to evaluate this thing, right? And I don't think we were elected to keep our heads down, and I wouldn't be, I'd be just as much of a chicken as I'd criticize others if I didn't thank you guys for coming here and testifying.
Thank you. Next on our agenda, then, Patricia McKaig, Matt Garrett. Oh, Senator Telfer is here. I missed you there. Would you like to come forward?
Yeah.
Senator, thanks for pointing that out. That gives you a third, and I think, how many do
Well, thank you, Co-Chair Reed and Co-Chair Benz and members of the committee. I'm Chris Telfer, Senator from District 27, which is also known as Sunny Central Oregon. I left there this morning. It was sunny. And you may think I'm here in opposition because I haven't been across the bridge probably in 27 years. And of the 158,000 people that I represent in the largest Senate district in the state, not one has been in favor of supporting this. But I'm here more with the hat on as a CPA who deals with clients all the time and trying to get funding and financing. And so as I read through this proposal and some of the studies that I've seen, I've got some major concerns. So I believe that it is premature to ask Congress for a commitment on the CRC project, and that CRC needs to address a number of issues regarding our own funding of this project before we ask Washington, D.C. for money. I understand that everyone wants a new bridge, and we should address congestion on I-5, but it looks to me like the bridge itself is relatively inexpensive, about $500 million. I think we need to understand that the CRC project is much more than just a bridge. There is an additional $1 billion light rail component and another $2 billion to rebuild 7 interchanges. Maybe this is necessary, but I need to know more. First, we need to know how much it really will cost. The governor's own independent review panel said that they can't tell due to old numbers and many changes to the original proposal, and they advised the CRC to conduct new cost estimates. I would like to see these before we talk about funding. The governor's panel also had serious concerns about the toll financing plan, which is the largest chunk of money we're counting on to fund this project. The panel advised the CRC to conduct a more specific traffic demand analysis and a financial analysis suitable for expected issuers of the bonds. When can we expect the CRC to provide this investment-grade financial analysis? I also have questions about the projected federal financing. It is up to the CRC to apply for federal funds. Here again, the governor's panel has specific concerns and recommendations for CRC's documentation and application for this funding. Why are we, the Oregon legislature, asking for a general commitment from the feds while the CRC has not advanced the ball with their required procedures? Specifically, the governor's panel advised that the CRC to advise the CRC to accelerate their federal applications and related documentation prior to submitting their final environmental impact statement. What is the status of the FTA and the FHWA applications? Why would we be asking the federal government to make a commitment before the CRC has even applied for funding? The governor's panel also said that the financial viability of the project remains a key concern in terms of needing project phasing alternatives in the event we have funding shortfalls. This seems to me to be a pretty important factor. What is the status of this phasing plan? It is my understanding that the Oregon taxpayers will be asked to provide about $450 million for Oregon's share of the project. When will we be asked for this money, and where do we believe we are going to find it? Are we going to raise taxes to pay for this? Where and how much?
Senator Telfer, I hate to do it to you, but I think you were the last legislator on our list before we started from ODOT, the governor's office, and so on. If I could ask you to wrap up, it would be most appreciated.
Certainly.
Thank you.
In closing, I would like to say that I just think this is premature. I don't think we have enough to even begin to ask for money. We don't have the analysis. We don't know how much. We don't even know the bridge. So I just think it's premature, particularly you go to the voters and ask them to make that determination. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Appreciate you coming over. And now, Matt Garrett and Mr. McCaig, please.
Oh, do you want me to?
Yeah, you can do that.
I can do it.
And Travis Brower.
I can talk and push.
Thank you both for being here. We've heard a long introduction. Now we get to hear some of the history and the detail, and we appreciate being here.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair and members of the committee. I'm Matthew Garrett. I'm the director of the Oregon Department of Transportation. With me is Patricia McCaig. Ms. McCaig is part of the Columbia River Crossing team. We look forward to sharing this presentation and answering any questions you may have. Let me also say that Washington State Secretary Paula Hammond would have been here, but she is sends her regrets because of legislative activity that's taking place up in Olympia here. But I am pleased to be here to continue the conversation that we have been having with you and your colleagues. Again, it dates back almost a decade now, where, as Representative Beyer says, we have engaged independently. We have engaged the good folks of the state of Washington as we spill out and evolve and mature the Columbia River Crossing. Speak today about the House Joint Memorial 22. Again, if you read the language, it's symbolic, but I would suggest it has some significance to it. The significance, as you read the body of the text, speaks to the importance and the benefits that this project brings forward to the state of Oregon, the state of Washington, the West Coast, and the nation. It urges the federal government to be a strong partner in the area of funding. I will say the Department of Transportation supports this language. I would say Governor Kitzhaber supports this language of House Joint Memorial 22. So with that, what we thought we'd do is share with you the history here and walk through a PowerPoint conversation. I'll be as quick as possible. I know there are a lot of folks, and I will appreciate that because I do need to hear from them. But let us begin with some of the comments earlier. Legislators said this is a project of national significance. It is the West Coast trade corridor from Baja, Mexico, to British Columbia, Canada here. Cuts through the states of California, Oregon, and Washington. Significant in terms of the commerce, goods, and services that run up and down the I-5 corridor. You see $40 billion of freight crosses the ridge annually. Again, speak a little bit later about the importance of freight here. But that will move to $71 billion as we look out to the 2030 horizon. The state of Oregon and the state of Washington are trade-dependent states. There's no question. One in four jobs in Washington is tied to trade. One in five in the state of Oregon tied to trade. This is the worst freight bottleneck in the nation. This is an economic conversation. Step back, kind of frame the bridge influence area, as it's called, the 5 miles that's been spoken to. You're going to run from the south to the north. I begin with the I believe it's I'm colorblind, so I'm going to get this color wrong. I think it's green.
Yes.
Those are green dots.
Yes.
Starting at the project's most southern boundary, the Victoria Boulevard, this Columbia Delta Park type area, we move up on the left-hand side. You'll see the Expo Center where the Max line ends. Move forward, significant activities in terms of freight and commerce at the Marine Drive interchange. Move to Hayden Island, the opportunity to bloom a community on Hayden Island. Cross over the bridge itself. Look at the four interchanges of the total seven we're talking about here, starting with SR-14 Mill Plain, which actually leads into the Port of Vancouver. That's the access point there, fourth plane, and then on to the most northern terminus at SR-500. So frame that. We've talked about the conversation. It's a conversation that dates back truly to 1997 and 99, when actually business leaders came forward on both sides of the river and said, listen, this is creating a disadvantage for our businesses. This is a bottom line issue. There needs to be something done. And in 2001 and 2003, Governors Kitzhaber and Locke at the time formed a 26-member I-5 Transportation and Trade Corridor group who for about a year and a half focused on some of the challenges that this 5-mile section brings forth to both states here. What they identified is the need for solutions. They actually identified three critical projects that needed to transpire within that short area. The first is the I-5 at Salmon Creek. It's in the Washington side, just a little north of the bridge itself. It goes to the 205 cutoff. That project is complete. They spoke to needing work at Delta Park here. We have just completed the Delta Park investment and that project, which added a southbound lane, shoulders to make it more efficient and more safe for the traveling public. The third project, and the project that we continue to mature here, is the Columbia River crossing. So again, on track with the direction and the charge coming from the trade and transportation and trade partnership. That was the jump-off point for the creation of the Columbia River Crossing Task Force, an effort from the 2005 to 2008 time frame with 39 members representing both Oregon and Washington, a broad swath of transportation interest made up that group. Again, they identified six challenges that played themselves out at a local, at a regional, and at a national level. They looked and identified the six projects I'll get to, but let me walk through the discipline that transpired in this time frame. These good folks and the investment of their energies and talents in 2005 identified the purpose and need. That becomes the authoritative document for the project. In 2006, they identified the evaluation and the alternative criteria they would use to narrow, to vet the various alternatives, concepts, alternatives to eventually get to a remedy. In 2006 and 7, they narrowed those down. They literally went from 70 concepts that were placed on the table. They took up to 12 alternatives, took that down to 5 alternatives during the draft environmental effort, and eventually came forward with a locally preferred alternative. In 2008, we published the draft environmental effort, and in 2008, all these folks within the region accepted and delivered a locally preferred alternative. We continue that process, and that's what we are in right now. We are still in the environmental process to bring forth, to narrow, and identify the solution. I spoke to the six critical problems that these good folks on the task force identified. Again, high collision rates. That's just a safety type issue. We are 2 times as high with any similar type of piece of roadway here. And during bridge lifts, it goes to 4 times more likely that someone's going to have an accident. Congestion. What we have right now are about 6 hours of congestion in the morning and the afternoon. You total it up about 6 hours. Those are the peaks. In between those peaks, freight navigates through there. If nothing is done, those peaks grow from 6 hours that we see today to 15 hours. This is not only a safety issue, this is an economic issue, and I speak to the freight issue on point five. Limited public transit. Again, the public transit, C-Tran, that sends buses across the I-5 corridor, those good folks get stuck in the same congestion, those same backups as anyone driving an automobile. We have an opportunity to grow travel options with the light rail, the 2.9 miles that will connect from the Expo site across the river into downtown Vancouver and on to Clark College. This 2.9 miles connects to 52 miles of transit options within the Portland, greater Portland metro area. The bicycle pedestrian facilities, they are very poor. It's a goat trail for all intents and purposes. If you've ever driven or walked or ridden your bicycle across there, it's about a 4-foot trail. It's not safe. We need to grow opportunities there, and we look forward to doing so. I spoke to the freight obstacles in terms of this being the number one pinch point on the West Coast corridor here. Again, the economics and the environmental implications go without stating. Earthquake risk, Senator Starr spoke to the issues there. We have a bridge that was built in 1970 that stands on Douglas fir timbers. If there is a big shake, that bridge will come down. There is a significant seismic deficit here. And to keep going there, two bridges for all intents and purposes, the first built in 1917, as I said, the second in 1958. They were different times. There's no question about it. It is the only lift bridge on the I-5 corridor. For all intents and purposes, the states of Oregon and the states of Washington have put a stoplight on the interstate. It's problematic in terms of the economy, the environment, safety. We turn our attention to safety. I've spoke to the high crash locations on I-5. The northbound I-5 ramp at Hayden Island is the most unsafe ramp. More crashes happen there than any piece of roadway in the whole state of Oregon. Again, collisions continue to grow. Congestion, again, the economic impacts. I spoke about the twice as high for a similar urban highway. And it was spoken earlier about a crash a day, a little over 400 as we see it right now. That will grow much like the freight volumes grow as we look out 20 years. This will grow roughly 80% in terms of additional crashes. Now, the importance here is not only on the scale of economic challenges, because when there is a crash, and because there are no shoulders, and because emergency service vehicles can't get there, we continue to queue. And the hours of delay, whether it's a personal transaction one's trying to commute to or an economic transaction, those are compromised. So these crashes take on a human toll as well as an economic toll here. Continuing with freight, I've already spoke to the importance of moving product, goods, and services up and down that corridor and the true dollar amount that's moving in terms of billions. 75% of the freight trucks crossing the bridge cross within this bridge influence area. And I spoke to the number of trying to maintain, to control the peak hours so freight can continue to navigate through those folks. Spoke to the trade-related jobs within the state of Oregon. I know you'll hear more from the freight community or freight interest a little bit later in today. So as we develop the project, again, a big, complex, noisy, messy project, no doubt at all. But let me tell you who owns this, because accountability and transparency is extremely important. I take very seriously every statement that was made by the good folks that came before me. The bottom line is the Department of Transportation in the state of Oregon and the Department of Transportation in Washington own this project. We have two federal leads, the Federal Highway Administration and the Federal Transit Administration. They are under the umbrella of the U.S. Department of Transportation and its Secretary, Ray LaHood. We have the local partners, the two big cities of Portland and Vancouver, the two metropolitan planning organizations, Metro and RTC, and the two transit districts, TriMet and C-Trans. We have a Project Sponsors Council made up of the principals of some of these players, created in 2008 by the governor. Its fundamental and foundational reason was, to bring forth transparency, accountability, engage folks so there is a forum to vet this conversation. It is led by Henry Hewitt, former chair of the Oregon Transportation Commission, and Steve Hornstein. He is an attorney from the Washington side here. Again, robust, healthy engagement. We have made the project better with the work of the good folks of the Project Sponsors Council. You see the quick notes of the number of folks, the level of engagement that this project has had. Nowhere in the state of Oregon have the numbers been anywhere close to this. This has been a comprehensive engagement on many different levels to inform the public, whether it's just the public in general or creating specific advisory committees and task force to inform us on specific issues. We have been aggressive in our outreach. So the Columbia River crossing, as it stated, is a long-term comprehensive solution. Again, it is a bridge. It is light rail transit. It is seven interchanges that brings benefits to the state on many levels. So here we have it, the replacement bridge that will reduce congestion. It will eliminate the bridge list. It will update to the 2500-year event seismic standard, the Cascadia event, underpinning this safety. We look at light rail to Vancouver, again, an opportunity to grow, to reach across the river and bring folks a little bit closer to transit options, transportation solutions for folks. Pedestrian bike pad, I told you about the opportunities and the challenges, and then the safety improvements as they play themselves out in terms of environmental economic efforts as well. The project outcomes, these are certainly the benefits, again, economic, environmental, whether it's greenhouse gas emissions, whether it's stormwater treatment, whether it's the safety issues, whether it's community development, Hayden Island, the various connections to the natural resource opportunities that this bridge does bring, as well as tolling, dynamic pricing. We are reintroducing tolling to Oregonians here. It's the first step to maybe greater conversations about how we fund transportation in the solution, but you need a beachhead. Columbia River Crossing offers that as well. Walk through the various outcomes here. You can see the congestion, up to 6 million transit rides per year, reliability of freight, greenhouse gases. There's one not on here, but I'd be remiss if I didn't say it, and I didn't say it loud. If we can breathe life and move forward and animate this project, it brings 20,000 jobs, putting paychecks in people's hands. I think that's extremely important and should not be lost in the conversation. Now, scrutinies, rigors, various reviews. There have been two significant reviews that the governors have engaged. The first, and it was mentioned, Tom Warren. Tom Warren was brought in May of 2010, convened by Governor Kulongoski and Gregoire, to look to how the project would be implemented, to look at its financial plan, the key objectives. In July of 2010, they came forth with 30 recommendations. And for all intents and purposes, as Mr. Warren would say, these recommendations were nothing more than a roadmap to deliver this project, the shortest distance from where we stand today, to delivering this project. They identified six areas that we continue to engage and vet. Phasing, it was spoken to. How do you break things up? More than likely, we will not receive a $3.5 billion check at one time. So how do you deliver the program? And we are vetting and the phasing of the conversation is transpiring. Public involvement, reintroducing, re-engaging. What this report said is, listen, you did a very good job of engaging folks. The problem is once they gave you their ideals and concepts, you went to work on it and you forgot about them. You didn't bring them back in. So re-engage those folks. They have added value to the conversation. The Hayden Island Interchange, as this independent review was transpiring, saying you have to take care of that land use issue. And again, its implications to marine drives. Well, we have solved that. We came forth with a solution coming out of the Project Sponsors Council and an integrated team from those various organizations and identified a solution that dealt with the Hayden Island challenges. Governance, this is a longer-term type issue, but looking at how you manage this transportation facility into the future, who sits around that table? Bridge type, a conversation that we have laid on the table, still being deliberated, but I think we'll have a decision soon enough. I'll speak to more about that. And then, again, make sure you become more refined as cost. As you continue to move through the environmental process, you'll be better able to identify the costs associated with it. You need to tighten that up. Before I leave this, what they said, the opening line, is this project is of such an import that it must be built. There is no question. So from that independent review panel, we took the bridge type, because again, until you have a bridge type and you know what you're designing, all these other things can't queue up. There is a critical path. So let us understand what this project truly looks like. A lot of these pieces will start to fall into place if we can clear this hurdle. So we actually brought Mr. Warren back and said, listen, we appreciate what you said. We appreciate that roadmap to delivery that you provided us. Now let us focus in on bridge type, because we believe that is a significant point in this critical path that we must deal with. And so again, bringing 16 different folks, a collective wisdom of national and international experts, to look at the bridge type. And what they said is, listen, the type you have is problematic. It's too unique. Understand how you got there. You were trying to serve too many masters here, but the risks and the exposures are too great with the open web design. Place that on the table. Let us put forth three bridge types, a composite deck truss bridge, a tied arch bridge, and a cable stayed bridge. And let us move forward with vetting these, because any of these three types of bridges will be acceptable. So their final report was issued to the governors in February. And the governor's response said the following. Listen, we want to do exactly what you say in terms of the open web. Let us set that down, and we will stop working on that. Now, let us focus our attention on three bridge types that you have put in for us. Let us engage our departments of transportation in an expedited review, and let us use five criteria. Let's look at the bridges in terms of what is the most affordable. What maintains the schedule disciplines? What minimizes environmental impacts and honors the environmental commitments we have made to the various regulatory agencies? Same thing. Let us make sure we honor the commitments we have made to the various communities. I hearken back to the Hayden Island conversation, a very difficult yet successful conversation. We need to honor that. And then finally, identify the bridge type that offers the least risky pathway toward delivery. Using the information that came from Mr. Warren's bridge review panel, augmenting it with some DOT folks from both Washington and Oregon, discipline-specific folks in terms of bridges, engineering, environmental expertise. We actually used the bridge report's foundational piece here, and on slide 16. I call out these comparative risks. Using all three, and they actually had 15 different risk criteria here, but just using these six here because it's fairly similar across the board. With one being the lowest risk and four being the highest, as we compare these various risk areas, how does it stack up? How do these things fall out in terms of what is the least risky option? And again, you can see that as you walk through the various schedule in terms of record of decision, in terms of designing the bridge, in terms of the cost associated with this construction. Procurement means how many bidders will you bring forth when you put this out to the construction world. The potential cost in, according to growth and construction claims. Where is the greatest exposure? Where is the least risk? And it felt that the best indicated the one with the least risk is the deck truss option. Here is a picture of a raw rendering of a deck truss bridge. You've seen these before, whether it's a Glen Jackson bridge, which is a similar type of family bridge here, or the Markham bridge. Again, but this is not the Columbia River Crossing bridge here. This is just a raw rendering of what a composite deck truss type bridge looks like. So. Takes us pretty close to where we stand right now. What are the next steps? Was spoken, what is the legislative engagement? Let me try to tell you what's in front of us here. And again, I would submit to you, all you need to do is look back, because past is prologue. The legislature, you and your colleagues who have come before you, have every opportunity to engage this organization, the Columbia River Crossing project team, as we continue to mature this through the environmental process to the record of decision onto construction. So, but again, we are close to finalizing a bridge type. I believe this is a major milestone that will open up the work that will lead us to securing a final environmental impact statement, completing the NEPA work, moving us into final design on the bridge, and then toward the purchase of right-of-way, right to the cusp of construction here. Continue to work, always working with our regulatory agencies. Publish our final EIS, receive the record of decision, move to the tolling conversation. The finance, again, once we understand what we're building, we can be more defined in how much it will cost. I think here is an opportunity that legislative conversation will truly take place. We also have engagements from our commission. from our treasurer. This is a comprehensive conversation. We're not doing this in a vacuum. We will bring collective wisdom to inform this discussion. And then we will continue to work with our federal partners as we queue up whether it's Federal Transit Administration money, which has been identified. The administration has identified the Columbia River Crossing as a project with financial opportunity if we can continue to move forward and secure the appropriate documentation. It was mentioned the financial fronts that we're playing itself out on. The bottom line, it is a three-front assault. Federal monies to the tune of the Federal Transit New Starts money, $850 million. And again, that's been something that's been identified by the Federal Transit Administration, by the U.S. Secretary of Transportation as doable. And they've highlighted the project as moving through that New Starts process. The Federal Highway Administration, this is the highway side, discretionary monies at $400 million. We believe that is an appropriate amount to seek, given the placement of our delegation and given the history of what our delegation has done in their positions back in Congress. We have the state commitment. You've heard, I think it was Senator Telfer speak to a $900 million state commitment. That's Oregon and Washington, so $450 million each. An opportunity to find money at $450 million that will leverage nearly $3 billion in money coming back, notwithstanding the benefits that the bridge offers, but just the return on investment, $450 million that brings forth $3 billion. And then finally, the tolling. We, again, as we move forward in the tolling conversation, we will do an investment grade analysis. There's no question about it. But you have to be a little bit closer and know what you're going to build before you get there. But again, with the assumptions we have made, at about a $2 to $2.50 toll, you can see, depending on where you, when you toll, you will generate anywhere from $1 billion to $1.4 billion. You total all those up, and then you have that range of $3.2 to $3.6 billion. I leave the last slide as just the project schedule, just to kind of summarize where we are. You can see we are still in the final environmental impact statement discipline and phase, hopefully securing that by the end of this year, moving to that record of decision. That's a federal document that comes from the Transit Administration and the Highway Administration saying you have followed the disciplines of the process. That allows us to move into right-of-way acquisition and places us into final design, where we do the final polishing of the project. That's probably a year-long effort, and that puts us right to 2013. And if all things do indeed fall into place, we would break ground. We believe it's about a six-year construction time frame, so we would open the bridge in 2018 under the best conditions. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, that's my presentation. Happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Director Garrett. Ms. McKay, we'd like to hear from you, and then we'll take some questions.
Chair Reed, members of the committee, obviously in the deference of time, I can read my audience. I imagine that what you'd like to do is ask questions and get on with the rest of the testimony. I'm happy to answer any questions. Might tell you that we have some people in the audience from the CRC who can answer questions about traffic modeling, forecasting, greenhouse gases, any of those kinds of things if you need be, but I understand you're pressed for time and you have a lot of people.
Thank you. And just for our record, if you would identify yourself.
Patricia McKay, Columbia River Crossing.
Thanks very much. Let's get the questions. Representative Nathanson, and then Representative Vance. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have just one question I'd like to ask about today. Mr. Garrett, in your presentation, you mentioned the cost, and it would be roughly $450 million per state. So that appears to be an even split. Is that an agreement that's been signed by the governors that the that responsibility would be split evenly in cost?
Chair Reed, or Co-Chair Reed, Representative Nathanson, it is an agreement between the two departments of transportation that has been signed and agreed to, not by the governors. We have gone in with a 50-50 split. Based on the way we do business with the state of Washington, we have a lot of bridges that we maintain and operate, and we move and we engage on that front with a 50-50 share. So there's a history that dictates that's the way we'll approach this bridge.
Yes, thank you. A follow-up. The project is more than just the bridge. There's interchanges and other stuff that's going to happen. So I'm wondering if you could help us understand, is there a document that exists or that you can find somewhere in a file cabinet or a virtual file cabinet and online that shows what all the components of the project are, because one of the things that's occurring to me is I'm trying to figure out where most of the benefit, the immediate benefit, as well as the long-term potential costs are as we consider land use shifts, possibly even tax revenue shifts, as we change the way people move about in the region. So I'm trying to figure out that the benefit as well as the cost side.
Fair enough. Co-Chair Reed, Representative Nathanson, more than happy to give you the various components and the breakdown associated with those components.
Thank you.
Yeah. Representative Bentz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This gives me an opportunity to ask this question. It's rather broad, rather general, but it fits what I've heard a lot of my colleagues mention, and that is the concern about where the legislature fits into this process. The my vision of this has been that we would listen today and hear, I hope, those that have been most heavily involved, you both, for example, and others, tell us how the legislature will have an opportunity to weigh in on these really important issues. My vision of it has been that at some point there will be an opportunity for legislation addressing first the governance of the bridge process, the building process, the design of the process would, or design of the bridge would be part of that, and then secondly, the funding. When I looked at the presentation we just saw, I didn't see that piece, and I need to hear from you guys kind of where you think we would be left if we adopted this this memorial in its current form, because I can understand the concern that folks would have that somehow we bought off on this process, and then later when it comes time to say, oh, we don't really want to spend this much, or oh, we don't like that design, I can hear folks saying, well, why did you ever vote for that memorial? And so I want to hear from the two of you where in this process this very, very necessary discussion should occur.
Co-Chair Reed, Co-Chair Benz, let me break it down in maybe three areas here. I think, without question, the finance conversation. Again, there is an obligation of the state of Oregon to put some skin in the game here. You and your colleagues will be engaged with that, not in the 2011 time frame, but we'll begin the discussions as we begin today leading into 2012. We need to show some commitment to the Federal Transit Administration. Again, if they are going to hold a position in the queue for this this light rail investment, the component of this bridge, we have to show that we have the financial commitment in line. That's just the way their process and protocols play themselves out. If you can't do that, you move to the back of the queue until you can. So we need to engage on a financial side. Specific to governance, I would say perhaps you need to engage. But again, if past is prologue, we have, through agreements, very successful working agreements with the state of Washington on how we deal with transportation infrastructure. Now, that's one way we could do it. There have been other conversations about different mechanisms in terms of governance and the overall structure and how we manage and operate a facility that may require legislative engagement, not only at the state level, but the federal level. I think we continue to explore those. But let us breathe life into a project before we figure out how to govern it, if you know what I mean. It's a sequencing type issue. So specific governance, perhaps there's a legislative avenue to run forward. Again, specific to folks maybe raising an eyebrow of what you passed today, read the language. I would suggest to these good folks, read the language, and what we have done is all we have asked the federal government to do is be a very strong partner in transportation investment here. We have more discussion here at the state. We do have a financial obligation in order for us to make the math work and fund this program. But what we do today, I don't think commits you to any financial arrangement right now. We have to mature that conversation and let us decide on a bridge type that allows us to trip some wires, to do the analysis, to move forward and identify the various critical path issues that we must move to before we get to construction.
Chair Reed, Representative Bentz, if I may.
Please.
I think the question has to do with the immediacy of legislative action and involvement. I think you've heard from some of the people who testified earlier, as well as some you'll hear from as the hearing goes on, that it is the time and place, if maybe not a little late, but certainly the time and place for the legislature to become involved in a more mindful way with the project. And that includes, I believe, we've made endless reports to the legislature, but I think it's a little different question now, which is the independent review panel proposed that the project begin developing governance options, and they created a subcommittee to do that, which has met twice since the independent review panel concluded its work. And I would assume that out of that work will come different options that would be presented to you as part of the discussion about how to move this project forward and in what form the governance should occur. The funding discussion is time for exactly this time and place. It would have been premature sooner, and I think it is at the moment where it is the most valuable to begin to identify what the real costs of the project are and how we're going to fund it. And that's something that the governor is interested in doing with you.
Thank you. Representative Smith.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Matt, so I know a lot has been, when concerns have been raised, what I've heard up to now is sort of, well, $100 million has been spent. Who are you, single representative, to raise a question about where we've already had so much analysis? I haven't heard that from you, but I've heard that from other people, not nearly as wonderful. And I've heard about the process. I heard that the chair of the task force was Henry Hewitt, somebody I know and respect, who works for was chair of a law firm I know and respect. I had a question from a constituent if that was the same law firm that performed the legal work on the project, but I don't have any information on the record, and I was wondering if that was accurate, if I was misinformed.
Co-chair Reed, Representative Smith, I do not believe so.
Okay.
I do not believe so.
Okay. Thanks.
Very good. Thank you. I expect we might have some more questions as we work through, and if we get to it, we might bring you back towards the end of the hearing to clarify some things.
Chair, I hope so. This is the quietest I've ever been in my entire life.
I am impressed.
I can testify. No, I'm just kidding.
We don't have time, Representative Smith. So we'll start down the list of people who have signed up, and that will begin with John Watt, Steve Bates, Gary Neal. Okay, and as you get coming forward, I'll tell you how long you have, and do that while you're sitting down so that you're less likely to leave when you hear the number. 2 minutes per, please, and we'll keep moving through as quickly as possible. Dwight, you want to get started?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. I've never been able to say my name in 2 minutes, but thank you so much for the opportunity. My name is John Watt. I'm here today representing the Medford-Jackson County Chamber of Commerce. And we're about 285 miles away from this bridge, and perhaps you wouldn't think, why is it so important? Our board has discussed this. This is actually our number one transportation priority to support the Columbia River Crossing project. Primarily, our Chamber of Commerce is made up of over 1,400 members, all of whom are very small business people. So I'll try to reflect the thoughts of those small business people. For the most part, they're either shipping goods out or they're receiving goods for sale or for production or some other thing. Like most businesses nowadays, they depend upon just-in-time delivery or on-time delivery. It's not a matter of what day something is going to arrive or what day of the month something's going to arrive, but what time of the day. And so the concern comes from these folks when they talk to a shipping company. If they're shipping something out, they want to know when those goods are going to be delivered. And quite often with a congestion or more specifically, all the time with the congestion that this bottleneck causes across the Columbia River makes those kinds of things uncertain. So I would just finish by saying this is a discussion that has gone on for a long, long period of time. I had an opportunity in my service in this great legislature to be at the beginning of that discussion. I've heard today from several legislators whom I know and respect, and certainly respect your opinions. We know it's something that needs to be done, but we need more information. It sounds to me like there's a lot of information being gathered and given in this process. It's now up to this legislature to do what's right for Oregon, and let's get this project going. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Well done. Mr. Bates, it's your turn. I'll just say who's on decks, too, so we can continue to move efficiently. So Mara Gross, George Crandall, Joe Courtwright, you're on deck when this panel's done.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you very much. My name is Steve Bates. I'm the Vice President of Redmond Heavy Hauling in Portland. Our terminal is on Columbia Boulevard, which is in the bridge influence area. I've been part of this process since the inception of the freight working group, which has been 5 or 6 years now. We've looked at various different bridge and interchange options over the last 5 or 6 years. As Director Garrett mentioned, there's $40 billion worth of freight that crosses that year bridge every year. We happen to be right in the middle of it. The bridge has outlived its functionality and its design. It's totally obsolete. I feel the industry suffers dramatically because of that on three different fronts. First, reliability. The industry has a multitude of tools that we use to schedule ourselves and to get us on time. With bridge lifts, congestion, and incidents that happen totally unexpectedly and way too often on the bridge, all of those tools are out the window. 75% of the truck trips, as you've heard, are within the bridge influence area. Many of those trucks are trying to make multiple trips a day. It's very difficult to do. 42% of the trucks use the I-5 bridge because it's shorter, and they're hoping for faster transit times instead of the 205 bridge, which is dramatically further. 8 to 12% of the truck traffic, or 8% of all the traffic, is truck traffic. With that said, reliability becomes extremely important because it's such a short trip that the drivers have no other way of making up any lost time. The second issue is for travel time and delays. Reducing costs has always been an issue with the trucking company. That's how we make our money. Fuel is now at $4.06 a gallon approximately, which is 18 to 20% of our operating costs. I'm budgeting now for $4.50, $4.60 fuel, which scares the crap out of me. Labor in the heavy haul industry in our particular business runs about 25 to 29%. When we're stuck in traffic, it goes to 35, just bam. So time is real money in terms of fuel and labor.
And that might be a good place to wrap up. I'm sorry for cutting
off. All right. I'm done.
Thank you very much. Mr. Neal.
Co-chairs Reed and Bence, members of the committee, my name is Gary Neal. I'm the general manager of the Port of Morrow, and I thank you for allowing me to make some comments here today on House Joint Memorial 22. This particular capital improvement project is pretty critical to all parts of the state of Oregon. We're located approximately 165 miles east of Portland on Interstate 84 with our terminal operations and our industries that are use the services of the Port of Portland, the Port of Vancouver, and downstream terminals, and in our international business, as well as moving freight in and out of our region. And the congestion is very much of a concern to us for transportation, freight mobility improvements. If you look at the channel deepening project that just got completed, this is just another similar kind of project that is critical to not only the states of Oregon and Washington and Idaho, but far beyond. And this congestion is really critical to assist in moving us into the future. And that's why this is such a large cost that we need to make the investments to make it happen. And it takes time, and there's a lot of environmental issues that have to be dealt with. But along with that process, and if you don't start today, you will never get this completed, and it's a critical component for our future development of our region. And with that, thank you.
Thanks very much. Unless there are any quick questions for this panel, let's see. We'll call up the next panel, Mara Gross, George Crandall, Joe Courtwright. Thanks for being right on top of it, and I'll say off the start, particularly to you, Dr. Corbett, I'm sorry we have to be so compressed. I know you've done a lot of work on this and other things, and we're glad you're here. I'm only sorry that we're so limited in terms of time. But
I understand.
Happy to let you, or do you want Ms. Gross to get started? Please.
Absolutely. Thank you. Co-chairs Reed and Bentz, members of the committee, my name is Mara Gross, Policy Director at Coalition for a Livable Future. We have been engaged on the Columbia River Crossing for several years, including on the project task force. First, I'll say we support improvements to the I-5 corridor. We need to ensure travel safety, reliability, ensure good jobs. Yet we're opposed to the current plan for the CRC, first because it's financially irresponsible. And I'll let Mr. Courtwright and others speak to that in a matter of time. We're also opposed due to a very real risk to public health and the environment. These concerns stem primarily from the freeway expansions and miles of huge interchanges, which constitute a majority of the cost of the project. It's a freeway expansion that goes over a river, not just a bridge. And research on decades and of experience shows that expanding highways does not reduce congestion. This project leads to traffic problems both in the heart of Portland and on I-205. There are issues with traffic, air quality, endangered salmon, community impacts, and there are serious legal issues that flow from these concerns. And there are solutions. That doesn't mean throwing everything away that's part of the plan. There are good elements, including transit, improved access for pedestrians and bikes, and variable tolling. Congestion pricing or variable tolling, in fact, is a key element to manage traffic and pay for improvements, and we recommend an amendment to ask the federal government to allow us to implement tolling on I-205 and the parallel facility, I-205, now. We should be considering long-term solutions, high-speed rail, not part of the plan. Reconsidering the interchanges as recommended by the review panel, not part of the plan. Priority for freight and carpools, not part of the plan. This bill would get you, the legislature, on record of supporting the CRC without a real discussion of the trade-offs, financial or otherwise. This may be the only time you're really asked to weigh in on a project that could cost the state $500 million. So in sum, I ask you to please take more time, not to hold a work session today, to fully vet and consider amendments, and also please vote no on House Joint Memorial 22. Thank you.
May I ask a question? If you're considering amendments, so you've already come to a conclusion about what the amendments might say?
I had one amendment that I think would be helpful, but I don't think we have had a chance to had enough time to fully consider all amendments that we should be looking at. I think there should be some serious amendments looking at much broader issues than we had the time to consider so far.
Okay. Thank you. Dr. Corbett.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, for the record, Joe Courtwright. I'm president and economist with Impresa in Portland, Oregon. I've undertaken an extensive study of the finances and the economic impact of the Columbia River crossing. You all should have copies of it. In addition, we have prepared a response to comments that were offered by ODOT. There are three critical things you need to know about the Columbia River crossing. First of all, as proposed, the cost of this project to Oregon and Washington travelers and taxpayers over the next 30 years will be $10 billion. And those are not my estimates. Those are numbers taken from the CRC, ODOT, and WashDOT. It's a combination of the construction cost, the interest cost, which is not a simple interest, but is a very complex borrowing akin to a zero interest, no down payment loan with a backloaded balloon payment. The toll collection costs and the other miscellaneous costs, including the cost to fix the $1.3 billion problem of the bottleneck at the Rose Quarter, without which you do not get the transportation benefits that everyone is assuming for this project. That, according to the independent review commissions appointed by the governor. Second, you should know that the forecasts on which this project are based are simply wrong. They assumed, the ODOT and others assumed, that the rate of traffic would increase to more than double the historic rate. And in fact, traffic is going down on the I-5 system. And right now, today, we are 17,000 vehicles per day below the level that was forecast by ODOT. They're already demonstrably wrong. That undermines both the environmental impact analysis and, critically, the assumptions about how much revenue that they can generate. Third and final point that I'll make is this is an extraordinarily risky undertaking, and that despite all of the claims about it having been vetted, it has not been subjected to a serious independent analysis of the financing. Mega projects like these regularly run over budget. ODOT's track record with its three biggest projects right now are all 100% over budget. And you should know that there is also the other risks as well. And critically, the thing that needs to be done, according to the independent review panel, is you need to have an independent investment grade forecast before you embark on this project so you know what the risks are. That simply hasn't been done. Not only has it not been done, it does not appear in the project schedule anywhere. And you should know that ODOT has deleted from the project schedule plans to undertake a funding risk analysis. Simply put, the homework hasn't been done. It's extraordinarily risky.
Appreciate your willingness to compress a lot into a short period of time. Before we turn to you, Mr. Crandall, on deck, Brian Gard, Bernie Bottomley, Angie Dilks, please. Your turn.
All right. And we're going to get the projector turned on here in a moment. My name is George Crandall. I'm a principal in the firm Crandall Rambula. We revitalize cities throughout North America, and we work on transportation projects all over North America. And we have a very brief presentation simply because I think you need to see an alternative. We talk about an alternative. If it isn't this, what is it? This is a consensus alternative from engineers who call me up in the middle of the night who are working on this project, saying this project is out of control. This is what you need to know. And from retired transportation engineers, from neighborhood activists, they say we need to come up with an alternative. This is their alternative. This is one way of doing it. And so we're going to present that to you. And could you turn that on, please? And
I think she's putting some paper copies of your presentation in the back.
So okay, she would turn it on. So I'm going to fly through this because of the limited amount of time, but I think that the graphics are something that we all need to take a look at, the consensus alternative. And so this is the Columbia River Crossing compared to the common sense alternative. CRC is on the left. The common sense alternative is on the right. It's a three-bridge crossing. CRC has commuter autos. It has trucks. It has light rail. It has pedestrian bike. And there it is. The new bridge is only about 25% of the cost. Most of it is in Washington State, the 2.5 miles. And so the CRC is really a Columbia Freeway project, not a bridge. And the expert panel said you had the wrong bridge design, and the interchanges needed simplifying. The issue is, what happens to commuter rail? There is no commuter rail in this project. There is no high-speed rail. And so I would say that they have the wrong problem definition. This thing started 10 years ago. We are in a different world. They left out commuter rail. That's included in the common sense alternative. So on bridge one, commuter autos, trucks, safety, it is a safe bridge. This comes from a WashDOT, and this is the cost of doing the retrofit, so it would be the most seismically safe bridge in Oregon, better than the Markham, better than the Fremont. So bridge number two would have light rail. It's a local bridge, light rail, auto, pedestrian, bike. Bridge 3, then, would be a new bridge. It would be for that commuter rail, high-speed rail, and truck freight. The existing rail bridge has about 65 trains a day on it, 12 passenger trains. It cannot take commuter rail, high-speed rail. It's not suited for it. Doesn't have that capacity. And so that new bridge would have that commuter rail, high-speed rail, as well as trucks. We know that Washington State is way ahead of us. They have substantial funded improvements for their high-speed rail. We have nothing. So high-speed rail, Eugene to Vancouver, we're behind the curve. That's what this slide is about. There is substantial federal money, perhaps, for the high-speed rail. Barge traffic, you've heard about that. Well, the problem is right now there are about 525 lifts a year on the I-5 bridge. By putting a new lift span in the middle of the existing rail bridge, you could run barges straight through. You could eliminate those 525 lifts because they're all under 60 feet, and that clearance under the existing bridge is 70 feet. So there's where the new lift span goes. So there is a fix, and it's endorsed by these agencies, and that's the cost of doing it. It's cheap. Comparative evaluation of
Mr.
these
Crandall,
two.
I've given you a little more because we had a technical difficulty, but if you could please wrap up.
Okay. You've got as many road lanes as far as capacity. you actually have more passenger capacity on the common sense alternative when you put the common sense alternative up against it. It is response to greenhouse gases. It can be phased, and so you see, first phase, 0.3 billion, second phase, 1.6, goes up to 2.6. The comparative cost is, when you put the commuter rail in, $2 billion less. Using Joe's cost is substantially cheaper. You run a consumer report evaluation against the two. The common sense alternative beats it on every count.
Thank you, Mr. Crandall.
So,
I think we'll have to stop there.
And what I would like to say, this compares to the Mount Hood Freeway project, which I worked on many years ago, and we ended up saying that wasn't the thing to do. And the Mount Hood Freeway project would have transferred congestion onto Portland's loop. This one would do the same. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And we'd, of course, be glad to have any of the written testimony and spend some more time.
Sure.
With you. I apologize for having to hurry you through that. Representative Smith, quickly.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Yeah. So two of the more compelling cases that I have heard for 7 years on this are twofold. One, seismic. If there's an earthquake, it's going down. And two is freight. It's bottlenecks. It's got to move.
Mm-hmm.
If we wanted to solve those two problems, and I understand that's different from your proposal, and maybe mm-hmm. Joe or somebody, or Mar, somebody else can answer. If we want to do those two things, make sure we don't die in an earthquake and make sure we can move trucks, how much is that going to cost us?
The seismic is about $300 million, and then you've got the most advanced seismic performing bridge in all of Oregon and Washington. So that's $300 million. As far as moving the trucks with the local bridge, you could probably, and the commuter rail bridge, about another $1 billion. So you're probably about $1.5 billion if you wanted to solve that problem.
Thanks.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Smith, the cost of the seismic retrofit is in the same ballpark as the cost of demolishing the existing bridges. So you could fix them for about the same amount of money that it would cost to bring them up to modern standards.
$1 million here, $1 million there. That's thank you. Brian Gard, Bernie Bottomley, Angie Dilks.
Thank you.
There they are. And while you three are getting settled, Ken Smelser, Ken Hayes, and Paul Edgar will be on deck. Who'd like to start?
I'll start. Thank you, co-chairs, members of the committee. My name is Brian Gard. I'm director of the Columbia River Crossing Coalition. Columbia River Crossing Coalition was formed in 2009 to advocate for a new Interstate 5 bridge. The coalition consists of more than 400 business and labor organizations, businesses, unions, and individuals representing thousands of Oregonians and Washingtonians. Our single focus then and now is to encourage the various interested parties to come together and to build the crossing sooner rather than later, both for the economic and environmental reasons that you've heard, and also because it will generate, using extremely conservative estimates, 20,000 jobs over the 5 or 6 year building process. In the interest of time, I'll skip over a lot because Matt Garrett covered a lot of the process. But one of the things that jumps out from that discussion of the process is that these reviews have not been exercises in rubber stamping. Substantive recommendations have been made and accepted, and they're helping to build consensus. There is reason, based on this, to have some trust in this process. It's a complex project. The process is not done. If we can have that trust in the process, rather than look for ways to say no, we can look for ways to say yes. This is just too important to the region to do otherwise. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Who's next?
Co-chairs Reed and Bentz, thank you for the opportunity to appear before you today in support of HGM 22. My name is Bernie Bottomley. I'm the Vice President of Government Affairs and Economic Development for the Portland Business Alliance. The Alliance strongly supports the Columbia River Crossing project because we believe it is critically important to the Portland metro region's economy and, indeed, the economy of the entire state. You don't often see Associated Oregon Industries, Oregon Business Association, Oregon Business Council, and the Alliance appearing together. We're not here together right now because one of our number is stuck on the freeway up in Portland. But not because of the lift span. His car broke down.
No problem.
when you do see us together, it sends the message that it's something that we all feel very strongly about and that our very diverse memberships also feel very strongly about. The Alliance supports the CRC and has for quite a long time because of its impact on the economy and jobs. We've done two economic analyses in the last couple of years that illustrate the point, and I'd like to just talk about those briefly. One is a study that we just recently did on international trade that identified 470,000 Oregon jobs that are associated with exporting and importing activities in Oregon, with just the value of merchandise alone being $19 billion per year to the state. A vast majority of the value of exports and imports to the state are transmitted over this area of the bridge influence area. And so you can see the critical nature of this these facilities to Oregon's very robust, growing, healthy international trade sector. The second study looked at the cost of congestion to the state of Oregon's businesses. And the study found that a failure to invest in transportation improvements like the one we're talking about today would lead to a potential income loss of $1.7 billion annually in Oregon by 2025 and the loss of 16,000 ongoing jobs. So clearly, the business case for building a new facility here, we believe, has been made. Chambers of Commerce, of which we are one, are typically very cautious in calling for public spending. But when the business case can be made, we also understand that sometimes you have to invest money to make money, and in this case, we think that's a good investment. Thanks.
Maybe that was the Academy Award.
You know, I'd like to thank my parents, my agents.
Ms. Dilks.
Not with that pressure. Chair Reed, Chair Benz, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Angie Dilks. I'm here today on behalf of the Oregon Business Association in support of HJM 22. I keep shortening my comments as we get further into the time here, so I'll just skip to the meat of it. Ensuring the project moves forward is at the top of OBA's transportation agenda for this session. Our members care about the Columbia River Crossing project for a multitude of reasons: freight mobility, congestion relief, greenhouse gas emission reductions, multimodal options, and job creation among them. We urge your support of HJM 22.
Thank you very much. Thank you. We appreciate it. And as I mentioned before, the next panel, Ken Smelser, Ken Hayes and Paul
Overstein.
Okay. So you can leave those right over here.
If anybody from CRC objects to this way, go ahead and cuss me out now.
2 minutes apiece, please get started. And while you're getting ready, I'll note that we'll be carrying the bill over to Wednesday as well, because I'm confident, given the short period of time remaining, we're not going to be able to hear from everybody who wants to be heard. So whoever would like to start, please do.
Okay. Hi, my name is Ken Hayes, and I'm a private citizen, and I'm just concerned about this bridge project because it's not solving the problem. It's just moving it 5 miles down the road, and it's just going to make the congestion that's already there worse because you're going to allow for building out of Clark County, and it's going to move the problem into the city of Portland, which already has, which the report that's being handing out to you, one of the worst air quality in the whole nation. That's what I'm concerned about, is the quality of our health. It goes over a lot of the health issues in that. The CSA alternative is a much better plan that could actually solve some of our pollution problems and actually improve freight, because it does allow for freight to easily move across the bridge, which is important to our economy. And I think another thing to consider is, would this project, the money allocated for it, be better spent in Oregon seismic upgrading our 30 worst bridges and using the CSA alternative and saving some money and then doing some seismic upgrading? Because as we've seen in Japan, earthquakes, we could have a severe earthquake, and that would be a serious issue for Oregon's future. So thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. You can move the microphone a little bit.
Chairman Reed. My name is Paul Koberstein. I'm an editor of Cascadia Times. We're an environmental journal in Portland. We spent the last 2 years investigating the air quality impacts of this project. We've heard from the CRC. They say it will support good air quality. It will reduce greenhouse gases. We look at the actual numbers, and we found quite differently. The CRC would add toxic pollution to Portland's already toxic air quality, which is already tainted with 14 carcinogens at unhealthy levels, and would add two other chemicals to our air. the CRC would frustrate ongoing programs to clean up Oregon's air, Portland's air, and would increase pollution at the toxic hotspot at the Rose Garden, which is the worst in Portland, and would see an increase in congestion of about 50,000 cars a day. And that would, in addition to reductions that will already happen because of cleaner air, cleaner engines, and cleaner fuels. The CRC would make it harder, if not impossible, to... I'm sorry, lost my place. The CRC would add to the toxic pollution in Portland's North Portland neighborhoods, which has already received the brunt of Portland's air pollution, water pollution, garbage, and so on. So, for my report, it's been handed out.
We have it. Thank you very much.
17,000 words. Good luck.
That's a lot. Thanks very much. Please.
Thank you, Chairman Reed and committee members. My name is Paul Edgar. I'm a citizen of Oregon City. I'm actually on their economic development team, their Urban Renewal Commission. But one of the issues, I used to live in Vancouver and commuted to my office in Northwest Portland for 16 years. I understand the I-5 corridor, and I am coming out of the IT world. This bridge CRC project is wrong. It was wrong from the word go. It's not justified. There are alternatives. I've heard a lot of what's been said so far, and I'd like to focus a little bit right now on the alternatives. We have a safe, flat, slow-curve I-205 corridor. It's underutilized. It's not been invested into. A lot of places around the state need investment. You're going to take the next 20 years of federal funding and earmark it targeted to one project. What we could be doing is we could be, in a sense, looking at the I-205 corridor as the prime interstate freight corridor through the Portland-Vancouver region. Also, there are opportunities to go to the west, much like was proposed or talked about today. But we could create a truck-specific routes across the Columbia River port to port. When I was in early or the late 1990s, we had the Port of Portland and the Port of Vancouver come before the Metro Citizens Advisory Committee putting together the 2020 plan, and they recommended to us that we should have a freight-specific connection. Why haven't we done this? We've been worried about the I-5 bridge. Now, the I-5, one quick thing on the I-5 bridge. We could make corrections to or eliminate the intersections or the interchanges right in front and after the bridge. If we did that, we would eliminate 90% of all of the accidents associated with those bridges.
Thank you very much.
Should have been done a long time ago.
Thanks very much. We're going to do kind of a random a collection here for a couple of reasons on the next one. I should have said in advance, because Mr. Hayes and Mr. Koberstein put their two names together on one line, I missed that. So, Mr. Smeltzer, you're already up here, so please come forward. Chris Garrard, I know you can't come back, so you're the second person. And Janet Jarvis, I think you also had an issue on time. So 2 minutes apiece. Go ahead, sir.
Hi, my name is Ken Smeltzer. I'm with the Third Bridge now, and I got a chart, of course. I'll get over that in a second here. And I also would like to give you my Oregon budget smile, because the Oregon budget is a little bit light on some things, principally money. So as I look at the Oregon budget and I look at this bridge project, I see red ink everywhere, and that, my shirt represents that Oregon budget as well.
You thought perhaps it was something to do with another state.
Well, I won't go into that now. But at any rate, over the past few months, I have helped to sponsor a study on the work that had been done over the last 10 years regarding the City of Portland Freight Master Plan, City of Portland Comprehensive Plan, ODOT studies, and WADOT studies, and so on and so forth, a total of 9 of them, and it was compared with the CRC was compared with the Third Bridge Project. I wanted to give you a copy of this. I was not able to give you a copy of this today. I will make sure that you get a copy of it if I have to deliver it myself.
We've got
well, the first one that you see is actually a bridge which shows where the third bridge would go. It's the dark line to the west of the I-5 bridge. And that's just a partial part of the study here because it does include the fact that the federal government has made a chart at the bottom of the first page which shows that we are light on bridges, major bridges here. So we really need another bridge, not only for freight and transportation, but also for military reasons, for additional beachhead if needs be. Of course, we don't want that to happen, but to be across the Columbia River, but also as a lifeline bridge, such as they have at San Francisco area where they have a lot of bays and so forth. So the comparison between... now, this study is a draft. The final is coming today. But
we'll be looking forward to hearing from you on that. Unfortunately, that's the balance of your 2 minutes.
Thank you very much, and I have a parking meter I have to go fill.
Yeah. Works out well. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair Reed, Co-Chair Benz, members of the committee, here's my PowerPoint. I believe my testimony been
distributed?
Right now.
Okay.
They're coming.
I'll just
quickly.
Hold this up.
Okay.
While she's doing that, Mr. Garrett talked about the independent review panel and the 30 points, and I actually spent a lot of time with that, and I'd recommend that you look at those 30 points. My focus has been primarily on the finances, and there were seven different recommendations by the independent review panel. The IRP is being referred to as a roadmap. It's not a roadmap. It's not something that you just kind of follow along with. Things need to be done. And this chart that I'm showing you is the funding that's going to be required as we move down the road. And here we are down at this bottom piece. Here's where we are today. $120 million is that big. I'm asking you to look into the future here. This is a big hump that comes up, and the IRP has comments and recommendations and identified some challenges, very big challenges, with each one of these. And the bottom is Oregon's contribution. And actually, I was interested to hear Mr. Garrett say he's not going to ask for anything in this current session. Their plan was to ask for $40 million. But the total is going to need to be $450 million. Now, the one point, if I could make it, is...
That's probably all we have time for, so go ahead.
If any of these don't come in, the yellow and the green are going to fill it up, and that's our concern.
Thank you very much. Appreciate you being here. Ms. Jarvis.
Thank you, Chair Reed, Chair Benz, members of the committee, Jana Jarvis, on behalf of the Oregon Wheat Growers League. And we are here today in support of HJM 22, and not because we care necessarily about how many lanes the bridge has or whether it has light rail or bike paths. We're less interested in what's moving over the bridge as we are concerned about what's moving under the bridge. You heard Representative Smith talk about the intermodal shipments and the impact that they have on Eastern Oregon. And just to give you some perspective, 90% of Oregon's wheat is exported primarily to the Asian market, and it all moves down the Columbia River. There was some testimony about 6 hours of traffic per day and the rest of the time that shipments move under the bridge, but that the hours of traffic were going to increase. Well, those hours of traffic increasing will impact shipments moving down the river. You also need to know that there's 40% of the nation's wheat that moves down the Columbia River, and this is something I just learned recently, obviously, but it's a huge impact. It's 3.7 million tons of wheat that move down the river every year. And so for that reason, we're very concerned about not just doing seismic upgrades to the present bridge, but actually fixing the bridge lift problem and creating a bridge that doesn't have a stoplight on the I-5 corridor. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Those of you who are regular attendees know that, and in fact, Representative Greenlick previewed his reappearance that will come, so we can keep going until he shows up, but we're not going to get through everybody. So next on our list, John Ledger, Jeremy Rogers, Sherry Harris. Looks like Sherry Harris.
Oh, sorry.
More than one Sherry. That's good. And no Jeremy Rogers. So let's call Jim Howell. Okay. Mr. Ledger, you want to get started?
Thank you, members of the committee. Mr. Chairman, I'm John Ledger, Associated Oregon Industries. Mr. Rogers, car broke down. He was the one who was plugging the freeway, and he said he was thankful it did not break down on the bridge because it would have terrible economic consequences. As some of you may know, although a lot of people don't, Oregon is a manufacturing state. It's an exporting state. And wood products, metals, so we become a center for distribution. So this bridge is very important to our members, and our board has endorsed this project. This bridge project is, you know, I heard someone talk about designing a sailboat once. And it was a mix of opportunity and compromise. That's why they're all different. And I think that's what you're seeing here. Well, we've been involved in this process for quite a while. We think it's been a very thorough, robust process. You have WashDOT, ODOT. I think this has been a good approach, and we support this memorial. Why a memorial? Because everyone goes, well, what does it really do? Well, I think it does a couple of things here. One is it stresses the importance of actually moving forward on something having to do with the project, concrete with the project. Even though there are a lot of things that are yet to be decided, it's a big first step. It's a good vehicle for discussion and unification around the need for this project, and we think it's important to kind of put a stake in the ground and say we're moving forward. We know there are a lot of questions that still need to be answered, but we do support this memorial, and we hope you'll support it also.
Thank you, Mr. Ledger. Ms. Harris.
Good afternoon, Chairs Reed and Bence. My name is Cherry Harris. I'm with the Operating Engineers Local 701 in Gladstone, and I'm here testifying in support of this memorial. We have 4,200 members in our local union, and they're spread throughout the state of Oregon and Southwest Washington, 5.5 counties in Southwest Washington. Right now, about 3,200 people in that 4,200 membership are employed in the construction industry. And since the economic collapse of 2008, we have suffered dearly, frankly. Our hours worked by our members has fallen about 31%. And from 2007 hours, frankly. And we are currently holding steady with a 38% unemployment rate. It's staggering. For us, the Columbia River Crossing is about jobs, 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 any way you look at it. And it's not just construction jobs that we're talking about. It's about moving goods to market. It's about building this economy. And we think it's imperative, it's absolutely crucial that we begin this process. We have studied it to death. And now we have to get moving. I did hear one piece of testimony about the cost of waiting, the cost of continuing to hold in this holding pattern that we're in. And we've heard a lot of discussion about the cost of the bridge itself. Problem is, every day that we wait costs us more in our economy. We need to move forward. And I strongly urge you to support this memorial.
Thank you, Ms. Harris. Mr. Howell, I hope it's not going to be you that has to be cut off when Representative Greenlick walks in, so please go ahead.
Distinguished members of the House Committee on Transportation and Economic Development, my name is Jim Howell, and I'm here representing AORTA, the Association of Oregon Rail and Transit Advocates. We ask you to vote no on House Joint Memorial 22. Most of the whereas statements of facts in HJM 22 are untrue, partially true, or grossly exaggerated. As an interested citizen, I have followed this project from the beginning, attending most public meetings and testifying at many of them. I have been involved since the late 60s on transportation issues in Portland, from removing downtown freeway stop a freeway that would have decimated East Portland neighborhood. I've been advocating for public transportation alternatives such as light rail and improved bus service for 40 years. In January 2004, I attended the Bi-State Transportation Committee meeting when ODOT took over the responsibility for implementing recommendations of the I-5 Transportation and Trade Partnership Study. In doing so, ODOT, along with WestDOT, turned what was an inclusive multimodal approach to solve congestion problems on I-5 into a mega freeway project with light rail and bicycle tacked on to make it look green. All solutions, including serious alternatives that would significantly reduce commuter demand and on-ramp turbulence, were rejected. Local access bridges to and from Hayden Island, rejected. Commuter rail, rejected. Improved feeder bus network, rejected. Alternate local truck crossing, rejected. It has been clear from the beginning that the highway departments of both states, with their deep pockets, want to build a new freeway bridge and to rebuild all the interchanges within the bridge influence area. They are not interested in non-freeway solutions. After all, they build freeways, not railroads or local transit bridges and roads. The recent fuss over bridge types and costs diverts public attention from the big cost of this project, the $2 billion needed to demolish and reconstruct interchanges, purchase right-of-way, and demolish the two existing interstate bridges. These bridges are structurally sound, well-maintained, and have many decades of service life. We all want jobs. In closing, we all want jobs. But those jobs should be building what we need, not destroying what we have and replacing it with what we don't want.
I notice we have your written testimony here.
And, yes.
You've been reading from it. I probably was derelict in not pointing that out earlier and saying we will read it.
Thank you very much.
We appreciate
you being
here.
And be sure to read
here.
The next two pages.
Thank you very much. Also note for the committee that we have received written testimony from Bob Stacey. Just so you know, Mr. Stacey, it's R-E-A-D on my name. But we have that as well, and we will commend that to the committee's attention. We've carried the bill over, the memorial over to our Wednesday meeting, at which time we'll see if our schedule allows us to continue receiving testimony. Certainly appreciate everyone being here and continuing the conversation, and we'll look forward to seeing you again. Anything else to come before the committee today? I don't see any, so I'll close the public hearing and adjourn the committee. Thank you.
I'm sure you'll be able to sort out this.